All right. So it is 3:22:24. And I guess because it's 3:22:24, I will read something from Proverbs 3:21. That is Proverbs 3, verse 21. My child, Norm, don't lose sight of common sense and discernment. Hang on to them, for they will refresh your soul. They're like jewels on a necklace. They keep you safe on your way, and your feet will not stumble. So this is what we bring to you folks week in and week out here at Common Sense Ohio, where you can check out all sorts of great stuff. And, you know, not to compare us to Proverbs, but we at least try to bring common sense. And you can go to commonsenseohioshow.com, where we come at you with a common sense approach from Ohio at all sorts of stuff, news, I don't know, special interest stories, legal cases every now and then. And Norm in Texas today. Norm, you're in by phone because apparently there's no common sense down there to get internet in rural Texas. What's going on?
Well, they apparently run their entire infrastructure over barbed wire fence. So
right. The coyotes have cut the lines. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, look, we are brought to you from Texas, from the studio right here at channel511.com by Harper Plus Accounting, and they are in the throes of it. They are in the thick of it. They are in the middle of it. Whatever analogy you want to use or stupid metaphor or cliche you want to use, it's tax season, and they have already taken care of my tax stuff. Why? Because I work with them all year, and they had all my documents. I got them over to them. Not only are my business tax returns filed timely, well before March 15, my personal tax returns are done too. Now all that's left is the shouting, which is me squirming, shouting, screaming at Uncle Sam while I write the check on April 15 to pay off the blood money.
It's funny you say that because I've got a phone call to that same company right after this show.
Right. Get your stuff done.
Get it done.
And
it done.
We're still in March.
I know.
Imagine that.
It feels really good.
For you business owners out there who every year you're like, oh, I have to extend it till October. Not this year.
Oh.
Not next year if you got Harper Plus Accounting. So our accountant could be yours, Harper Plus Accounting. So we typically launch off with a World War II fact of the day. Norm, the last couple I've tried to find some analogous stories, and I think I've done that again today. March 22 in 1940, German U-boats sink several neutral ships. That's the factoid that I have found. So I listen to, every now and then I listen to competing podcasts, not that we're in competition with Ben Shapiro over at the Daily Wire, but I listened to him yesterday and he talked about what causes wars, and his hypothesis, and I think we've said this here too, is like when, he said it differently, but the way I always put it, when there's a vacuum and the United States of America is not out there as a force in the world, then the vacuum gets filled with all sorts of other stuff, and it's almost always bad. And he was sort of saying the same thing and gave a history lesson all the way back. And he ended the history lesson with modern times with the Houthis sinking neutral ships. But he sort of made the point that China, Russia, and Iran have sort of formed an alliance, and their ships, ironically, are not getting sunk, but ours are. And it sort of takes me back. In 1940, we weren't in the war yet. And U-boats were out there sinking neutral ships, and we had sort of taken a position of, I don't want to call it reclusism. Is that a word? Maybe. But, you know, I think the United States, by and large, didn't want to enter the war, and we've talked about this in the last several weeks. And because of that, there was weakness in the world, and the Germans could get away with doing stuff. Now, we certainly back then didn't have the Navy that we have now or the military might that we had now, but I guess the analogy is the same. It's like when the warriors out there in the world doing evil start sinking neutral ships, I mean, that's a hop, skip, and a jump from a hot war that involves multiple nations here, even a world war. And that's why I thought it was an interesting fact that in 1940, that stuff was going on and the U-boats were out on patrol sinking ships. So anyway, that's my World War II fact of the day. Norm, you almost always have more to add than what I can. So even in Texas, I'll let you talk.
Well, the amount of piracy also, in addition to, nation states or rebellious armies like the Houthis taking action in the Red Sea, you know, there's piracy off of Somalia, the famous Tom Hanks movie where the Maersk container ship was taken over by pirates and eventually he was rescued. The Moluccan Straits, down in the South China Sea, what is it, the Indian Ocean, but anyway, the straits that you cannot avoid if you're going to go to, say, Thailand or steam through to Indonesia. Those are very treacherous waters. And, of course, China's building these islands out, the military aircraft carrier islands, basically, land islands in the Pacific. And there's this move to declare more and more international waters as sovereign territory by either rebels or nation states. And we now have the world's second largest navy to China. So, you know, what you say is absolutely true. There is a vacuum. There is a perception of weakness by the with the United States. And, famously, Theodore Roosevelt steamed the Great White Fleet because our ships were white at that time. And during his administration, he sailed them, all around the world as a show of American strength and power. And then that reverted back during the Depression to a weak state. And as you say, Steve, look what happened. So
yeah. And well, two things to add. One, maybe Tom Hanks is the key, because he defeated the pirates. And then later on, he made another movie, which I thought was phenomenal. It was Grey Wolf.
Shows.
You can only see it on Apple TV, which I don't have Apple stuff, but my son got a 7-day trial subscription, so we watched it just last weekend.
Was that Greyhound maybe, or was it Grey Wolf?
Greyhound.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah,
it was a gray animal.
he was the captain of a submarine hunting vessel.
He was in a destroyer.
Not a battleship.
Yeah, he was
a destroyer.
Yeah, escorting convoys. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
don't give it away. Don't give away the ending.
Well, they fight. They fight German U-boats.
Yes, they do.
Right. Yeah. Glorious fashion.
It's a great movie.
So, but Tom Hanks is the key. So if we get him involved right now, maybe he can solve all these problems.
Maybe.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
For sure.
But at any rate, the other point I was going to make is a broader point about strength and weakness. How often in our daily lives is it effective in our businesses, in our relationships, in our interaction with even total strangers? When you portray weakness, it's almost always bad. In fact, I can't think of any time when it's good. Whether you're playing a board game, whether you're playing poker is a great example, because if you play weak in poker, the sharks will just eat you alive.
Steve, you brought up Proverbs, and I will admit, one of the most confusing aspects, of course, I was raised Catholic, so I call it catechism, but one of the most confusing things to me, and as an adult, I still don't have it figured out, was Jesus's admonition to turn the other cheek. I never got that. It's beyond my ken to understand really what he meant, because that is an intentional display of weakness. And you're right, in a world of men that are evil and greedy and destructive, I'm with you. No display of weakness, display strength at all times. But turning the other cheek, how would that work if they're coming to take your family middle of the night to a concentration camp? You know, how does
Norm, that has been, I've heard this. Now, I am no scholar of history, but I do follow, I have a Bible study that I follow, and I just Googled it too, and I'm not going to go into detail here because I don't want to do it injustice, but my understanding is that metaphor is related to stuff that would happen in court. So you would get slapped in court and you would turn the other cheek and get the other one slapped or something like that. It's not necessarily, it's true, or at least that's what I think. So I think,
really?
Yeah, I think there's something more to it than it just means let people take advantage of you and beat you up.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at the, from what I understand too, the commandments, and they've kind of gone religious on this, but thou shalt not kill. We actually translated that improperly. Thou shalt not murder.
Thou shalt not murder, right. So there are times when you have to kill. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we're kind of mixing Old and New Testament situation here. But I agree, Norm. It is kind of one of those, wow, okay, and that's what the Bible is. It's just this deep reading of going, what does this mean?
You have to have some historic context.
Yeah, you're right.
You do, and there's something, like I said, I'm probably doing an injustice, and I'm sure there's some Bible scholars or history scholars that could help me out with that, but in fact, I'd love to hear it in your comments, but there's something more to that than just get your ass kicked by bullies. Mm-hmm. You know, that it doesn't mean just that.
Well, and you know, Jesus had his moment in the temple.
He said,
stop it, and got angry. So, I mean, God got angry.
Yep.
You know, in essence. So, but yeah, in
the Garden of Gethsemane, when he actually got emotional too. Remember, he's he wanted his people around him. I mean, anyway, we're going down to Bible study. We don't need to do that.
But I think there was some emotion. All points that make sense. Yeah.
He showed his human side, and I guess that's relevant because next week is Good Friday. So
well, that's true.
Anyway,
we're always timely.
Steve, I would give up. I would give up all my earthly treasure to travel back in time with you when Jesus giving that sermon and you raise your hand in the back of the crowd and say, Jesus, does that mean you got to get your ass kicked by bullies?
Just curious. All right. Just curious.
That would probably be a moment Jesus kind of takes the stick and starts drawing in the sand in the dirt, and then the message is there again.
Right,
you know, it's
right.
One of those, I'm not really going to answer you, Steve, but come on over here and I'll write it down for you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure.
God.
I would be, I would be like the annoying guy in law school that asks all the nauseating questions about every possible gotcha that you could
and
have.
And you'd been on the short list for an apostle, but you just screwed yourself up, didn't you?
Right,
Steve, you asked too many questions.
right.
Oh my God. You guys are killing me.
So anyway, where's that in these studies, Lord?
Well, speaking of people having their asses kicked, our guest, Bernie Marino, several months ago, one of our guests, and of course, we got Senator Vance elected because he appeared on our show. So maybe Bernie's on his way to defeating Sherrod Brown. But Bernie defeated Matt Dolan and Frank LaRose, well, rather resoundingly, with a little bit more than 50% of the vote, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. What I like about this is that his platform was one of not necessarily a political party as much as I'm just tired of doing it the way everybody always does done it, you know. And I think if anything hurt him, I don't even know if this hurt him, but he had a Trump endorsement, which I don't know if that helped or hurt. But I think his popularity, at least when he was here talking to us in the studio, he was a very common sense, practical guy. And he didn't seem like a guy who would bend to the will of party politics as much as he's a guy that's like, let's get this done. We're going to roll up our sleeves. We're going to figure out the best way to do it. And so often I think his best way to do it was when he was talking to us, less is more. You know, you can't control the forces of nature. We have to operate within them and create the proper incentives instead of trying to just use power and money to fix problems. So anyway, I think it has more to do with that kind of attitude than it does he's a hardcore, quote, Trumper or MAGA guy.
Mm.
At least that's what I hope, because he's not. He doesn't seem like that to me.
Yeah, he's interestingly, people might remember from the show, he is an immigrant from Colombia, and he said his superpower is that he cannot be eligible to become president, and so what he does in the Senate will be purely, sorry about the semi-tractor in the background here, I'm at a racing track, people. So he can't be president. So he I think means by that is that he will not have ulterior motives or be jockeying for some kind of national, you know, profile. And he's also the chairman of a term limits organization. So he is pledging at most, if elected, to only serve two terms and then leave, public office.
Yeah.
Which is refreshing.
It is. Yeah. I mean, look, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it looks like he's setting himself up to, I don't want to say he can ever be fully immune to that, but he's at least putting safeguards in place where he can be rescued from it if necessary, or rescue himself from it if necessary.
Yeah. Yep.
Picking up on your power vacuum theme, Here in Texas, yesterday, there was a violent rush across the border through the razor wire, about 200 people. You know, I obviously cannot detect the ethnicity, you know, for whatever relevance that may bring to bear. But they did not look like Mexican immigrants. They looked like they were from other parts of the world. And they went right at National Guard troops who were holding rifles and seemed to be very confident that those would not be used. And they just blew right through the fence and into the United States. And then down in Florida, armed Haitian boats, you know, again, people with weaponry are landing on the beaches in Florida, and DeSantis has deployed more National Guard. So this debate about whether the constitutional language citing an invasion or not, you know, is it an invasion or is it not? Well, now it's ratcheted up into actual violence to enter the country. So I think it lends credence maybe to those two governors who are deploying their National Guards respectively, because the federal government is there's a vacuum there. They're not enforcing the border. So kind of fits in with your theme, Steve.
Yeah, I was going to say, hopefully it doesn't get to the point we have to have a National Guards person, man, woman, whatever, or any military have to die for this, and then it changes our mind about it.
No, that's right. And I think this is, you know, we talk a lot about the law of unintended consequences when weakness rears its head, and this is weakness. So there are rules in place. There are things that can happen. And once it gets to a point like this, people start getting a little bit more desperate. You know, there's people pouring on both sides, right? So the people who didn't make it in yet, the illegal immigrants who haven't crossed yet, now they're going to be even more desperate because they probably see that the hour may be coming that they can't do it.
It's 11th hour right now.
Right. So you're going to have this surge. I'm guessing. This is not factual. This is my prediction.
But it makes sense.
So, and then you've got the situation on the other side where Biden and crew are doing nothing about it. But now Texas is, but they don't have the power and force of the federal government to act like the federal government would act. So they're going to show some force, but it's not going to be the kind of force that, I guess the danger would be rather, that it's not going to be the kind of force that the federal government could employ to actually stop this thing. And, you know, it can be stopped and probably could be stopped rather quickly, but the half measure is going to lead to more desperation on both sides. And then, like you said, Brett, you end up with some tragic, somebody gets shot, a serviceman or an immigrant or something, you know,
totally unnecessary.
And, you know, this is why when you let your kids run the house, that's when they cut themselves by playing with knives or they shoot themselves by playing with guns. You can't let the inmates run the asylum. And, you know, you've got to have law and order. And, you know, our government is built on some of this stuff where you've got to have law and order, but not too much. And, you know, there's this careful balance between freedoms and rules of law. And here it's gone on the border issues. It's just gone out the window. I mean, it's a free for all.
Yeah.
There is a thing called Senate Bill 4 that the Texas legislature passed and Governor Abbott signed. And it's been up to the Supreme Court for a hearing on a stay. And the Supreme Court would not stay it. But right after they issued the decision not to stay it, which would have let the Texans go ahead and arrest illegals and deport them. It would allow state courts under Senate Bill 4 to deport. A federal circuit judge or a panel put a stay using a different theory. So this is getting, like, as you say, Steve, it really is a federal power, even though the Constitution does not use the word immigration in the Constitution, uses naturalization, but not immigration. And so the Supreme Court, I think, is sort of at sea on what exactly is the federalism stance involving immigration. Is it a state power? I don't think it's ever really been hashed out, or is it solely limited to the feds?
Well, I think it's important to sort of break down a little bit what's going on, because when people talk about the Supreme Court permitted it, or I've been reading articles here even this morning about it, about the Supreme Court action and the Fifth Circuit U.S. District.
Yeah.
I keep saying district. The Fifth Circuit is the appellate state or U.S. federal court, the U.S. appellate court that permitted the law after the U.S. Supreme Court decision. But what we're talking about, folks, is not whether the law is constitutional. We haven't gotten that far yet. The question is whether or not the law should be in place while we figure out whether the law is constitutional. So the state and the feds are going back and forth asking for injunctions, or the feds are saying, look, we want an injunction. We want a court order that says Texas is not allowed to enforce this law until we get a decision on whether it's constitutional or not. And Texas is saying, no, we want to be able to enforce this law while we figure out whether it's constitutional or not. It's up to the courts to figure out whether it's constitutional or not. So what we have so far is a bunch of proceduralism going back and forth, determining whether or not the law is going to stay in effect until the U.S. Supreme Court gets a hold of it and finally renders a decision. That said, one of the criteria, in fact, one of the key criteria to whether a stay is issued or whether the law is permitted to remain intact is whether the law or whether the party trying to promote the law here, Texas, has a likelihood of success on the merits. So one of the criteria to determine whether an injunction will issue or a stay of the law will issue is whether the law is going to be constitutional. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court was going to let the law remain intact. That's not a definitive ruling, but it's a bit of a telegraph. And now I haven't read the Fifth Circuit decision yet, rather, to see what their other angle is. But this is going to jostle around like this for a while. And this is exactly what we're talking about, guys. There's an old, you know, when you have bad lawyers, for instance, this is not that the lawyers on either side here are bad, but when you have bad lawyers, it tends to make bad law. When you have bad facts, it makes bad law. And the vacuum here has created bad facts. You got people arguing about something that should never have to be argued about, right? It's stupid. Everybody sort of knows implicitly that it's the federal government's job to protect the borders. And Biden, in a political jostling move, trying to please too many people, is choosing not to do that. In fact, he's circumventing it. He's flying people in to avoid detection or to avoid news coverage that he's actually letting people pour over the borders. So it's like by doing that, he's creating bad facts, and that's going to lead to these weird litigation arguments that the U.S. Supreme Court is going to have to sort of sort out. And it's sloppy. If anybody's ever played pool, billiards, and against somebody who, like your kid or something, and they're not good at all, and I'm not good at pool, but, you know, I know the game, it creates a sloppy table. And when you have a sloppy table, the game tends to drag on and on and on, and it can't get resolved, and nobody can win because there's balls everywhere, and it's sort of a mess. When you play sloppy, it results in sloppy results. I said results twice, but I'll take it.
That's excellent analysis. Thank you for that. That's good stuff. I guess what is so tragic is that while all these angels are dancing on the head of a pin, you know, we've got National Guard people that are in real jeopardy. You know, when armed immigrants are either charging or landing on beaches, I mean, you know, this needs to be figured out quickly. And it seems like, as you say, the pool table is in disarray, and it's just another disappointing aspect of America in, you know, 2024, that we don't have our act together as a country.
Yeah.
And we're being taken advantage of. It's just terrible.
Right.
Well, and then speaking of armed immigrants, I've gotten like 50 texts this week because I think it was who was the district judge that ruled on the constitutionality of a federal law prohibiting an illegal immigrant from possessing or owning firearms. And I forget what circuit that came out of or what district that came out of. But that judge anyway said, and I think it was an Obama appointee, said, no, the law is unconstitutional, violates the Second Amendment under Bruin, et cetera. Because it violated the illegal immigrants' right to bear arms, and this brings up some more constitutional nuances here about who are, because the Second Amendment protects the people, quote the people, and you know there's going to have to be a definition of what the people means. Does that include immigrants? Does it include foreigners? Does it include illegal immigrants who are by definition committing a crime? By being in the country, and is that a crime that would be sufficient to strip them away of a right to bear arms in our country? In other words, does the Second Amendment protect illegal immigrants? This judge anyway says yes, in sort of this apparent paradoxical, politically confusing application of the Second Amendment. On the one hand, it would seem that this judge would be ideologically opposed to the Bruin decision as it is and in favor of gun control. On the other hand, this judge permitted legal immigrants to bear arms. What I love about this is the debate. I love it when you can look, taking both sides of this for a second. I always like to take these legal standards and reverse them. So what, like, if you're a Second Amendment advocate and you say everybody should have a right to bear arms, then you have to sort of reverse this and say, all right, what about illegal immigrants? And at the same time, I'm making, as a Second Amendment advocate, arguments such as those with felony convictions should not be stripped of their gun rights, or those, you know, there's certain felonies that that we would argue would violate the new Second Amendment jurisprudence because we're pushing the bounds of the new constitutional standards. This is what advocates do, and this is what creates common law. As the law gets kicked down the road, a bouncing soccer ball going side to side, figuring out how the standard is ultimately going to play out, we get to watch that in real time. So now we've got the Second Amendment sort of reversed on the Second Amendment advocate saying, okay, Second Amendment guru, now we're going to give that right to illegal immigrants. What say you? And I'm not commenting on whether I'm in favor of that decision or not in favor of that decision, but I am in favor of the debate because that's what creates ultimately the proper legal standards.
And I love that, getting granular about what does people mean?
Mm-hmm.
You take it one way or the other. It's like, okay, so people can mean, let's say it means anybody that's physically on our land.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden, right. Like, well, right. So does that overturn federal prisoners being able to vote?
That's right. So, well,
I mean, there are a lot of, I don't know if that's there,
no,
correlation.
You're right. So as a so if you have a right to vote, so it throws into question these standards. In the Bruin case out of New York, the U.S. Supreme Court says we're looking at the history, text, and tradition of the Second Amendment to determine whether a law passes Second Amendment muster. So what's the history, text, and tradition say about illegal immigrants having guns? I mean, that's going to be the question, I would presume, that the U.S. Supreme Court is going to have to answer as this thing goes up the appellate ladder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know if you saw this or not, and it's kind of tangential with what we're talking about, but a couple of weeks ago, there's self-checkout comes to airport security. The first TSA self-service screening system in the U.S. opened up at Harry Reid Airport in Las Vegas. So the first TSA self-serving screening opened in Vegas. Pre-check passengers can bet on getting to their gates with greater speed by scanning themselves and their bags while minimizing interactions with TSA agents. It's a six-month trial program. And it basically is so you don't have to deal with TSA agents.
Interesting.
So the pendulum is swinging.
Just like Mohammed. Just like Mohammed Atta on 9/11, right?
Yeah.
No TSA agents.
Unbelievable.
Love it.
Unbelievable.
Right.
And I'm not advocating that we have to go through this check at all.
No, it's security theater by and large.
Exactly. But it was major. You got to take your shoes off, belt off,
that's our favorite
drop
saying.
Your drawers.
We got to do something.
You got to do something. But now all of a sudden, we don't want to deal with TSA agents. This is such a hassle. You can pay your way to get through this.
You can
thing.
Pay your way to get through, but I think it's probably also mostly budget. There's probably not enough TSA agents and we can't afford them.
Some of it. So, it'd be interesting to see if this comes to Columbus. I mean, is it coming to Ohio? After 6 months? In 2025, this will be something to kind of see. It's like, okay, maybe we don't have to deal with this crap anymore. To a certain degree. Unbelievable.
And yet, as I love Brett, how you raise this subject, because just this week Dana Carvey apologized to Sharon Stone for a 1992 skit on Saturday Night Live where he and I think Kevin Nealon, they were two airport security guys, and they kept having her strip clothing off until she was down to panties and a bra. And he said, oh, gosh, we would be arrested now if we did that.
I got to tell you, though, that skit is freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah. Politically correct or not, it was damn funny.
But you know, those sorts of things are markers in time. We need those markers in time of just how silly, how stupid things
have become.
Back then or whatever. Right. Times change. This apology stuff.
Yeah, I mean, how's that change anything?
It doesn't
and by the way, was
anything.
She not a consenting adult in the skit?
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Right. I mean, come on.
So foolish.
Yeah. You know.
So foolish.
So, going back to your Second Amendment stuff, there is a senator from Louisiana named John Kennedy, not to be confused with the late president. And Senator Kennedy's on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and of course they advise and consent on district court and appellate court nominations from the administration. So Biden put up this district court judge for the Seventh Circuit. She's a district judge within that circuit. And her name's Nancy Maldonado. She wrote a brief for the Brady Center advocating a ban on assault weapons in a Supreme Court decision. And he started to quiz her about it. And at first she said she just signed it. She didn't write it. And he being a lawyer himself, brought out, well, wait a minute. When you sign a brief, you're certifying that those are your opinions and you're lending your expertise to the court within that brief. And she said, yes, I guess you're right. And then he went on to ask. Yeah, because the answer is yes. And then he went on to quiz her about, well, what is an assault weapon, you know, since you're an expert on it. And, of course, she could not name the three aspects that Norm rattled off in a previous show about exactly 100% what an assault weapon is. But whatever.
Yeah, she had no clue. It was complete cluelessness. I saw that clip.
Complete cluelessness. But she wants to take it away from everybody. Right. But she has no idea what it is.
Yeah. I have had this conversation with people with boots on the ground here in Ohio, people with boots on the ground everywhere I go. Whenever this kind of thing comes up, I ask them to defend or to define what guns they want to ban. And they can't. Right. People can't. I'm not going to say everybody. Most people can't offer any sensible definition, which, you know, and we've talked about this in the legal system before, guys, like if you can't define something, then you can't enforce it. You know, like things, we have to have concrete reality in the world. It's sort of like back to our proverb, like you have to live with some standard of commonality with people, whether it's a moral standard, whether it's a legal standard, you've got to be able to understand what it is so you can not only enforce it, but people can live within the bounds of it. So if you just say assault weapon, and really what they're saying is guns that look scary because we don't like guns anyway, and then they're just saying, well, we don't like any guns. It quickly unveils the masquerade over the agenda.
Yeah, because an assault weapon can be anything because by definition, you're going to assault someone.
Yeah, use a weapon to assault somebody. That's an assault weapon.
Right. Or, maybe better definitions.
Are they going to define those terms as a certain type of
Please,
and you can do that.
Do.
Yeah,
Please
you can do.
Do
that.
That's
yeah.
fine. I'm all about that because, I think you should be allowed to have a weapon, but there are some in my mind going, so do you need it though? But I know you can have it. I know you can buy it.
What people start to do though is they assault weapon ban becomes a euphemism for we're going to ban everything we don't like. And that is like, I've heard people say, well, the ones that can just shoot over and over. And I've even heard, what's the show with, Whoopi Goldberg? I heard these idiots talking one time.
The View.
I heard these morons yapping about this one time. And they were saying, they were talking about how it was the Joy Behar. Is that her name? The blonde.
Yeah.
And she was saying, wow, you can't even use you couldn't even use an AR-15 on deer. It would ruin the meat. And I'm thinking it's a 22 caliber bullet, right? You wouldn't use it on a deer because it might not kill it.
That's right.
Right. It's like,
if you want to ban the truly deadly weapons, our dad's, you know, 30-06 deer hunting rifle, bolt action. Hey man, that'll blow a hole through you, you know, the size of a softball.
Right. Right. I mean, look, the 300 Win Mag that I use when I go big game hunting. Yeah. If you're going to ban a dangerous gun, like that's the one that'll ruin the meat, but she's talking about the 22 caliber. And it's like,
she's unbelievable.
It's just like, it just shows how ignorant these people are. They cling to an agenda. And this is, you know what, this is the core of what we're trying to do here, guy. Not to get too esoteric about it, but it's sort of the core of what we're trying to do here is like, all right, you say these things or people say these things, but they don't understand them. And they can't put together a logical syllogism to explain their position because it's just ideological BS. People don't take the time anymore to analyze their own theories of life. Instead, they just ascribe to a certain ideology and then buy into everything that ideology preaches. And then it's easy. They don't have to think it through.
Well, I think just what you brought up, Norm, about the analogy of this woman signing off on something that she didn't realize was actually going to represent her thoughts.
Right.
We do that a lot. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I agree with you. You literally sign off on it in your head going, that makes sense. Sure, I'm with you.
Yeah.
And you didn't do the research on
she
it.
Didn't do the work.
It's a perfect example that we mm-hmm. we put our signature, quote unquote, on stuff that we didn't do any thought process on. Yeah.
Well, and Senator Kennedy brought out more evidence of her kind of lackadaisical approach. I wasn't going to bring this up, but since you brought that up, Brett, she is pending right now 125 motions that are backlogged on her desk. It is the largest amount of backlogged motions in the circuit and the seventh highest for any district judge in the United States. So this lady just doesn't work. She just doesn't do her job, you know. So bad apple.
Wow.
Hey, speaking of the legal system a little bit, did you guys catch where that mother who abandoned her infant up there in Cleveland for 10 days while she went on vacation, she was sentenced to life without parole in that case?
I didn't hear the end result of that, but oh, wow.
Yeah, remind me of the facts. Yeah. Remind me of the facts of that, Norm. Was that did the child die?
Yes, the child the last appointment with the pediatrician, that the child weighed 22 pounds, and when the EMTs came and collected the dead baby, it was 13 pounds. It, you know, obviously living in its own filth for 10 days without food, water, or you know, any kind of care. And she just went on vacation. She just
went to Puerto Rico,
you know,
in Detroit, it says.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Right. And just checked out on this infant. And the judge said, well, you know, you ended, you know, forever that life is gone. So basically, I'm going to pretty much put you on ice, too, for the rest of your days on Earth. But I guess she'll be out at some point. I don't know what a sentence of life without parole really means, but you would know, Steve, probably.
Well that's what it means.
Yeah. Yeah. How did mental health come into play with this? I mean, obviously it didn't stand a whole lot.
Yeah.
It?
I mean,
wow.
She says it at the sentencing, I guess, I was in the hospital in January and February 23 because I had emotional and mental problems. On one of those two occasions, I wanted to make an attempt on my own life. I mean, look, she clearly had mental health problems. So this, you know, look, I this is where
that's
I ride.
Excuse
the,
it, though, of course.
But no, yeah. Not at all. And this is where I sort of ride the middle of the road, or I have to ride. I have to think through things through carefully because of what I do for a living. I represent people charged with crimes, and I will tell you guys, in my almost 29 years of doing this, most people aren't bad people. Most people aren't hardcore psychopathic murdering criminals. In fact, quite the opposite. Most people who commit those types of crimes or commit acts like this have pretty significant mental health issues underlying it all, or some sort of trauma or something. And I'm not excusing it. I'm not giving them a pass for it. But it's also not fair to go the other way and say this person's a diabolical, mean, horrible person. Clearly, she wasn't in her right mind. Clearly, she had mental health problems, and clearly, she committed crimes. And, you know, I've always struggled, and I think the law is going to struggle with this in perpetuity. With how do you deal with people like that? You know, if the person didn't do it on purpose, but did such a horrible, I don't want to say didn't do it on purpose, did it with, say, clouded mental health issues, and wouldn't have done it if an insane mind, how do you handle it? And, you know, there's always a backlash. You know, the act is so bad that irrespective of the mental health issues that caused it, she's getting life in prison. And, you know, I would, there's a decent argument here that, that's too much, or that the law didn't take into account the mental health problems. On the other hand, somebody's dead, a child, the most horrible crime you can possibly imagine. I mean, look, guys, there are lots, there's histories of this, of young mothers leaving their babies next to dumpsters of because of mental health and postpartum issues. They don't get a pass for it. But you have to take
remember
into account.
Steve, you remember that mom that, God, it was a famous case where she had her kids locked in the car, like three kids, and she backed it into a lake and they all drowned.
Yeah. Same kind of thing.
Yeah. Like it's inexplicable. Like you can't even, like, I don't even,
right.
My head can't, I can't wrap my head around what would drive somebody or, you know, what impulse would allow them to do that. But that's where psychiatry comes in.
Yep.
You know,
you have to get when you represent folks like that, you get them evaluated, you present the mitigation at court, and you just hope and pray for everybody involved, because there's no explanation that makes this work on any level. And there was a case in Columbus, Ohio years ago, went up to the Ohio Supreme Court. I think her name was State versus Hopfer, Rebecca Hopfer. And, you know, she was one of those young mothers that didn't tell her family that she was pregnant and the baby was, it's horrible. It's always horrible, because you can sort of see what makes it so hard is that you can empathize with the mother, and at the same time, you have to punish the act. And that's when the criminal justice system is difficult. The criminal justice system is easy when you're dealing with, like, the Night Stalker, you know?
Right, right.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Or John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah, right. Like, well, you know, it's easy then. Or a gangster gangster killing people for drug money. I mean, it's easy then. Easier, but when it gets to these weird issues of diminished capacity that doesn't quite equal a defense, and you still have the horrible act with an unthinkable death, it just is. It's hard for the system, man. That's why the career I've chosen shortens your life, right? Because you have to struggle with those issues all the time.
Right.
Yeah. My dad, who was also a defense attorney. At times, you know, he didn't do that exclusively, but would always get asked by lay persons, non-lawyers, you know, how can you possibly represent, you know, monstrous people doing monstrous things? And, it's part of our system. If we do not defend the most despicable people for the most despicable acts, then we don't really have a system of justice. We just have, you know, vengeance and get a rope and let's hang this guy and you know, vigilantism. And that's the beauty of America, is that we bend over backwards to tolerate the worst kind of language under the First Amendment. And we bend over backwards to make sure somebody who cannot afford a lawyer even gets a some sort of defense at the bar.
Yeah, no, it's funny. The last jury I selected, I don't know. I wanted to shake things up a little bit, so I thought I'm just going to do something a little bit different. So you know what I did, Norm? I played Family Feud. I stood up and I said, you know, 100 people surveyed, top five answers on the board. Here's the question. Number one question asked of a criminal defense attorney at a holiday party, because I think it was around the holidays. And you get some hands up, and I started picking the jury, and eventually it comes out. And the question I get quite often is, how do you represent those horrible, awful, guilty people? The number two answer was, can you get me off? can you get me out of my truck? Can you get me off the crime? And my answer to that, Norm, is sort of interesting. That's not the real question. The harder question for the defense lawyer is, how do you represent the people who you think might be innocent? And, you know, how do you live with that? Because then at stake is everything. Then at stake is a life that if I'm going to impart my morality into my job, which, you know, as lawyers, we try not to, but if I'm going to impart my morality into it, and it pervades the choices I'm making, then it's far more difficult to represent somebody who you believe is innocent. Because then at stake is everything in the world. Everything in the world is on your shoulders, that's a harder question than how do you represent the guilty people. And look, how do you represent the guilty people is also a difficult question, and we justify it in all sorts of ways. Mostly because I think the government is you have to keep the government in check from corruption, and that is a Sisyphean task. Is that the guy who had to push the ball up and down the? Sisyphean task, because it's never done. If we don't, if somebody's not out there fighting against the government action, then you're never going to expose the corruption. And those of you who think that your version of government will be immune from corruption, then I direct you to every history book that was ever written.
Yeah. Well, no question about that, man. guys, can we talk a little bit of the Intel processor control?
Well, you broke up on us, Norm. You're sounding like a robot. Say that again.
Oh, sorry. Yes, can we discuss before we close out? Can we talk a little bit about the CHIPS Act and the Intel, slowdown on the project here in Central Ohio?
Yeah,
lay it on us.
Yeah, so Intel has put the brakes on. They've slowed down construction of what they call a fab. It's just another name for a factory, but where they make chips. And, of course, there's this huge project out in Licking County in the Johnstown area, $20 billion project or something. It's just unbelievable. And apparently the CHIPS Act, when passed, it was chock full of DEI quotas for construction workers, for electronic engineers, for programmers, every kind of, the gender, I guess now there's more than two, but all the gender, all the race stuff was packed into the CHIPS Act. And they're finding that they just cannot get, female electricians or diverse plumbers or whatever the issue is, the trades just cannot supply those in sufficient numbers. And it actually is crashing some of these projects in the United States under the CHIPS Act. So Intel is now going to Ireland and I believe Poland for some to build additional factories rather than the United States. I don't know what's going to happen in Johnstown, but currently, they put and this is all corporate welfare money, of course, yeah, which is a whole nother discussion. But this is an urgent thing because China is threatening to take Taiwan in the next 4 or 5 years. They have actually announced kind of a calendar, like they did with Hong Kong, to take Taiwan. And Taiwan makes 90% of the chips used by American corporations in our products. So yeah, this is a rather urgent situation.
There's so much to unpack here. This is the same nonsense with everybody's like all these greedy gas and oil companies jacking up rates and yada, yada, yada. But at the same time, the federal government has dropped their yoke on them saying, we're not going to authorize any new drilling. Nobody's going to invest in any future drilling activity. So you don't have the private money, you don't have the funds. And so you've got to start circling the wagons and you can't produce your product. This is like far less abstract of that problem. You've got a stupid government yoke regulating who you have to hire. We can't find somebody who qualifies. So we're going to start moving overseas and building our chips where we don't have to worry about such nonsense. It is lunacy. And then, the other side's going to blame Norm, the patriarchy or whatever it is, for not incentivizing enough women and minorities to go into the STEM fields to want to build chips. But the fact is, we don't have those people. I find it hard to believe that that's worthwhile or a worthy reason to empower China to take Taiwan, sort of the end game, what you just talked about.
Yeah, and it's really hard to believe that, okay, walking into this whole project, Intel, number one, knew of this DEI stuff. They're not stupid.
Well, they probably supported it on some stupid level.
And secondly, they really can't build this without without the CHIPS Act. There's not enough demand that they have to, come on. I mean,
well, why would they? I guess the question is, why would they? Why would they?
When it's free money, basically. I get that. I get it.
It's cheaper to go overseas.
And that's true, too.
Why would they? It's like,
it's the whole thing's mind boggling.
If there's ever an intervention into the system that I might be able to get my head around, it would be incentivizing chip manufacturers to do it right here in the good old US of A. Because otherwise, if you don't create tariffs or some other restrictions, we're going to send all that crap overseas and give it to our enemies. Or at least, if nothing else, give other economies the boost, not ours. Yeah. And instead, what we've done is incentivize it and then handcuff the companies so they can't do it. It's just such, it's It is everything wrong with government meddling in the private industry. Everything.
Intel bought right into it. There's no way they walked into this blindly. Intel is not stupid. They've done this before. They've walked into building these things before in certain areas. And I'm sure they saw, okay, easy money, free money. Let's go after the chip stuff. They knew the DEI stuff was there.
Was it there when it was? When did that pass, Norm? When's the CHIPS Act? Or when did all the DEI crap descend onto their backs that they had to start following these rules?
Yeah, so the CHIPS Act was passed very, very early in the Biden administration. Right. And I am not going to lay this on Joe Biden, because I am confident, other than the DEI stuff, I'm talking about the corporate welfare part of it.
Right.
I am confident that President Trump, were he reelected, he would have signed the CHIPS Act. No question about it.
Well, sure.
In my mind.
Yeah. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the DEI component of it, right?
Right. Well, I have a problem with the corporate welfare part.
No, I got you.
I also have a big problem with the DEI part. On the corporate welfare, let me say one thing. Because I really like what you said about, you know, the strategic nature of the chips. So in the military field, which you could argue this chips, you know, the chips availability has a huge impact on the military.
Yep.
For fighter jets, for warships, for, you know, Navy SEAL binoculars, name it, you know, got chips in it. But in the military, when they went from the 1911 pistol to the Beretta, I forget, M87, whatever the Beretta is called. When they went from the Colt M1911 to the Beretta gun, the Beretta is an Italian company. The government, the Pentagon, requires all factories making items for the, you know, war materiel for the Pentagon. It has to be made in America. For the exact reason that Steve just said about the chips, for national security reasons. So Beretta had to build, even though they won the contract, they had to build a factory in the United States to make that pistol for the Army. And this is a good analogy for why you would want to bring chips back to the United States.
Yeah, and what if Beretta, what if the government then said, Beretta, but you have to have all female workers making the guns? You know, I mean, look, so they wouldn't do it. They couldn't do it because there's not enough female workers who want to go build guns, in theory.
Right.
You know, it's like, why don't...
They know how to work at a foundry.
Let's go ahead.
Know how to operate a lathe,
or at least the labor pool is not ready yet. And maybe never will be.
And would it ever be? So you get into this psychological question of what do women like to do and what do men like to do and where do we sort?
Right.
And, you know...
Right.
All you got to do is sort of look at what they do. We do different things.
Yeah.
Thank God, because otherwise it'd be boring.
Yeah, because Intel came here under knowing they were going to work with Ohio State, all universities around here, as a feeder.
As a feeder, right.
They knew that. So really the pool is not there yet.
Yeah.
And
guys, if it's going
to be. You have to presume that there's enough women who would fill the quota that actually want to do that job.
Sure.
And that presumes before that women have gone to school or whatever training they needed to go do that job.
There's a ramp up.
And
to
that
it.
Presumes before that they even want to go to school for it. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
And
guys, I'm in a car race today. Okay. I'm in a car race. There's something like 30 cars in the race. There's one female driver. There are no laws, policies, or anything to prevent females participating.
Is she driving a minivan, Norm, a Honda Odyssey?
No. She's driving some really big, she's driving a big, nasty, hairy V8 vehicle, and I'm sure she's a great driver. The point I'm trying to make is there's actual outreach by the sanctioning body to encourage more females in motorsports. And of course, you know, you got Danica Patrick, you got some great examples, Lynn St. James. You know, the point is not as many females want to do this
and
of their own volition.
Why is that? I mean, I'm not asking you to answer the question, but rhetorically, we should all think about the psychology of it. Why do men tend to sort towards more dangerous activities like underwater welding?
I can't answer that.
Or like building the the big steel buildings or whatever. I mean, clearly there's some physiological reasons for this and psychological reasons for this and some developmental reasons for this. And you go back to caveman times. Yeah. There's some reasons that, that probably justify it beyond discrimination, I would think.
Oh, sure.
Probably.
Yeah, but, just interest. What do they want to do with their lives?
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Why are my boys running around playing with sticks fashioned as guns when they were 5 years old? You
right.
know? It's like in the woods. It's like, why does that happen? And I didn't have daughters, but my buddy's daughters weren't doing that. They didn't even want to do it. And they're, people, you know, the other side would say, well, they're socially conditioned. It's like, I don't buy it. That's a bunch of BS.
Yeah.
So I lied. I lied. I said Intel was my last thing. I just want to stick this in because I think it's super interesting. RFK Jr. is part of a legal team suing the state of Washington over COVID censorship. He's representing NBA legend, basketball player John Stockton as the client, who was shut allowed to post or express his COVID beliefs. And, I think it's interesting that we got a candidate for president who's also lawyering for free speech right now. I think it's great. So,
Well, look, the conversation we had, and then I'm going to do my normal wrap up. The conversation we had earlier about guilty people and innocent people and representing people in court, it reminded me of a case that I read recently out of the U.S. Supreme Court. And they told a story in a principle, the U.S. Supreme Court actually did this. They told a story about a principle of Roman law by Emperor Julian. And the story goes something like this. Numerius, the governor of Narbonensis, was on trial before the emperor. Numerius contended himself with denying his guilt. There was not sufficient proof against him. His adversary, seeing that the failure of the accusation was inevitable, in other words, he was going to lose, the prosecutor, exclaimed, "O illustrious Caesar, if it is sufficient to deny this charge, what hereafter will become of all the guilty?" To which Julian replied, "If it suffices to accuse, what will become of the innocent?" Right. So they're making the point, if the evidence is insufficient here on a guilty guy, do you look at it like, all right, well, if we let this potentially guilty guy go, then what's that going to say to all the other guilty people? And the other side of the coin is just the opposite. What are we saying about all the innocent people who are wrongfully accused? And for those who love stuff like that, as I do, the quote is from Coffin, COFFIN versus the United States, 156 U.S. 432, 1895.
Wow.
U.S. Supreme Court bringing it home.
Yeah.
So, well, look.
Do you recall, Steve, what the charge was before Caesar? What was the case?
I don't know. I don't know the story of what the guy was accused of. The coffin involved, I think, a bunch of mail fraud type stuff that they didn't have sufficient proof of. But I should dig in. That's a good question. I should dig into it more. But anyway, we're going to go.
Oh, you want to stick in the word of the day?
Oh, yeah. Let's get the word of the day.
So,
we got Brett's word of the day.
Let's see if you. Jugging. Have you heard of jugging?
Is it pornographic?
No. So
I'm going to guess. Okay. I'm going to guess. Jugging is when you put somebody in detention at school.
Ooh, that's a good one. I like that. No, it's not, though.
This is like a board game.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So it's a noun. It's a theft committed by a perpetrator who waits at a bank near an ATM or outside an expensive store, watches for customers who might be carrying a large amount of cash or goods, then follows them to steal the money or goods from the customer or from their car.
Wow.
So it's modeled on the word mugging. The word jug can be a slang term for bank.
Yeah.
That I've never heard that one.
No.
So I thought, well, if nothing else, you're a little bit more smarter when you go into court going, oh, yeah, it's a jugging case.
Yeah, he's out there jugging.
Yeah, they're jugging.
Jigging and jugging. All right. Well, with that, we're going to wrap it up. Another awesome March 22 edition of Common Sense Ohio, where you can check out all the back episodes at commonsenseohioshow.com. And guess what? We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. We're on Rumble. We're everywhere. So go check us out. And don't just check it out, guys. Like it. Share it. Tell your neighbors about it.
Comment.
Yeah, comment. Norm, tell us if we're stupid. Norm, if you don't think we're reading your comments, trust me,
yeah, we are. Yeah.
Norm is incensed by all of it. I'm just kidding. No, check it out, guys. We appreciate your support. If you want to be on the show, that's easy. Just go to commonsenseohioshow.com. Send us an email. I think we're going to bring in some guests here in the near future, and I really love those guest appearances. So if you think you got the chops or you got a good idea for a show, check it out and send us a
Or if you're running for office, we're 2 for 2.
Yeah, we're 2 for 2.
Marino and Vance. Both so, run and they won.
If you follow the logic, all you have to do is show up on our show and you get elected.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
That sounds like government logic.
Frank LaRose would sadly argue that
actually we're two
we
out
didn't
three.
Come through for him.
Yeah, 2 out of 3.
Well, I guess it depends on what point. You're running for.
Yeah, true. So.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to wrap up another riveting dose of common sense here at Common Sense Ohio, where we are coming at you right from the middle each and every week, at least until now.